Welcome to the Student Ministries Podcast. I am Kate Kim, the Discipleship Coordinator for Watershed, which is the high school ministry of Perimeter Church. And today we are going to continue our conversation on mental health in teens. And I'm so excited to introduce Jordan Yates. He is a licensed professional counselor here in the Johns Creek area, and he's going to introduce himself and tell us a little bit more about his background and how long he's been working as a clinician.
What's up, Kate? Thanks for having me. Yes, so I've been counseling for 13 years now, and even before then I had a career in sports writing, but the sports writing career led into me becoming a counselor because I really enjoyed interviewing people. Awesome. But I wasn't enjoying as much covering sports. It got tiring after a while. That's only so many different ways you can talk about how somebody scored a touchdown or scored 30 points in the game. When you do it every single day, it gets tiring. But what was different was anytime I interviewed somebody and they opened up to me, it was a different story. And then from there, just realizing that there's non-athletes that have stories to share too, I really wanted to enter a field where I could use my skills as an interviewer to get, you know, everybody to open up and share their story and help them with that. So I've been counseling in this community for the past, like I said, 13 years now, with a few different centers, and I'm about to open up my own private practice this summer, and I'm excited about that. Yeah. I'm well known for doing recreational play therapy, which is just kind of a souped up version of play therapy. It's more play therapy for teenagers, young adults. So instead of like sandboxes, it's like basketball courts. It's like throwing the football. It's like a pool table. It's like ping pong. So, because anytime you try to do that play therapy approach with a teenager, they'll let you know that's not going to work for them. So I found a way to make it more age appropriate, and it's served me very well.
That's awesome. I know that you've indirectly really benefited our community too here. He has worked at Summit Counseling, where I know some congregants have gone throughout the years, and we've really benefited from his expertise, and he's come and trained some of our leaders, discipleship group leaders, and equipped them on how to care for students with mental health. So we're going to just dive deeper into this conversation about how do we care for students who are struggling right now. And just a reminder, when we talk about students, we are talking about high school and junior high students. So from anywhere from 6th to 12th grade. That's really what we're focusing on. And our hope in this podcast is to equip leaders and parents and anyone else who is coming alongside to support teens. So we talked about this in the last episode, but I'd love to hear from you and your unique perspective, Jordan. According to the World Health Organization, 1 in 7 adolescents in America is experiencing a mental health disorder. How have you seen this impact your work over the past 5 years, and what do you think has contributed to the increase in anxiety and depression?
That's a great question. I know that's what's reported, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's more than that, but still 1 in 7 is very high. I would say that's probably the main reason why I went more the kids, teenager route when I was deciding I was going to be a counselor as opposed to adults. Because I felt like at some point in your life, you're going to run into something that's going to lead to an uptick in anxiety or depression. And the earlier that you can get somebody into the practice of seeing a counselor, much like, I mean, I got a 7-year-old daughter, and she's been to the dentist already probably 7 times because she goes every single year. So she's very used to going to the dentist, and she knows how to take care of her teeth better because of that. Because it's not her dad telling her to brush her teeth, it's a dentist. And if she does that correctly, she gets a little prize out of the prize bag. So I felt like there was an issue because I was interviewing, you know, high school athletes. I was interviewing college athletes. I was interviewing professional athletes. When I was working with the high school athletes as a sports writer, there was just more of a hope for something better when they would tell me about their story. So I entered the counseling field as someone that wanted to see a lot of kids and adolescents, because I just wanted to equip them at a young age. When life hits you and life hits you hard, there are some things you can do to feel empowered so they don't feel so powerless. So I think that anxiety and depression, you know, can be even more volatile when you're an adult because you have more things that you could do to be destructive. Even though these days teenagers are getting more access to some destructive activities, which is very concerning.
So how do you, since we have seen this increase and like you said, teens have more access to destructive behaviors, how do you see the church, what do you see the role of the church in supporting teens who are struggling with mental health?
So because I've gotten so many referrals from churches over the years, I've heard from kids their issues with the church, their frustrations, but also the awesome things about the church and how, even though school wasn't a good week, they had this to look forward to on Wednesday night and on Sunday. So one thing that I've heard that is a complaint about, from the kids that I see about the church, they don't like being lectured at. They don't like being preached to. They like being seen as an expert of middle school life and high school life. So one thing that I think would be great for churches to start doing is really allowing kids to share how the church can be better, their experience at the church, and like make them the experts. It's something about when you allow a kid to be an expert, they feel this empowerment that's more of a sense of a healthy empowerment than what they've been doing that's more of a inappropriate, unhealthy empowerment. So I think if the church came, certain leaders is like, hey, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? How can we make your experience on Wednesday nights and Sundays better? They would just feel so validated. And they might not know what to say at first, but you can have another session later on and say, hey, now that you've had a week to think about it, what did you guys come up with? And I think that could do a lot because they're more of the expert on that than I am, believe it or not, because they're in the pews, and they're with one another. So I always, I make every client that I see, no matter how old they are, the expert on their life. Now, are they the expert on, diagnosing anxiety and depression? No. Are they the expert on family dynamics? No. But they do have their own expertise towards their individual situation and their family dynamics. And they really feel honored and appreciated when they're seen as the expert on that.
Yeah. That's a great point. And I think there's a lot of, there's a picture of Jesus in the Bible when he's approaching children. He's approaching people who are adolescents and really hearing from them. And I think, to your point, we do sometimes want to be dismissive of younger people and their opinions, and yet really empowering them to use their voice and to speak into the life of the church is really important.
Yep.
Yeah. What do you think? We've seen this increase in anxiety, and there's a lot of things that could potentially be contributing to that. And let's first talk about social media use. How do you think that has contributed to the increase in anxiety and depression, and what are some practical ways we can address that?
Yeah, that's a great question because, when I was coming up, I just turned 40 this year, so didn't deal with social media in middle school and high school, which was a blessing and a curse because there's a lot of cool things about social media that, I'm not even on social media now, but if I, social media has never really been my thing, but if I had the opportunity to, be involved, whether it's on TikTok or Instagram or Snap, as a kid, I'd probably be doing it now as an adult. A lot of awesome things, a lot of ways that you can feel connected to one another and kind of, keep those connections going on even when you're not at school. I think the flip side of that, it's destructive now and shoot for the past 10 years, is that this inability or unwillingness to turn it off. This is really good timing that you asked me that question because a lot of the students, I don't know when this is going to be posted, but a lot of students just came back from spring break. So I'm starting to reconnect with a lot of my clients that were away with their families or with their friends. And I noticed more of a lightness, whatever they had going on, it just didn't matter as much for those kids that did not have their phone attached to their hip. Like they were out there snorkeling. They weren't able to be on their phone because of all the stuff they had going on. So I picked up on that. Meanwhile, some of the kids that just, went somewhere, but were just in the hotel rooms or not really doing anything, it was like that same weight that they had before they went on vacation. I mean, the beauty about vacation, you're supposed to unplug. And just the fact that so many kids will go on vacation and they still got to have their phone attached to their hip. I think that shows this dependence that's very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. It's not really given them time to introspect, to explore. They continue in the same patterns. So that's my fear. My fear is the continued dependence that's only growing stronger. And, you know, they can't prove that you can be addicted to social media yet. But what can be proven is that, you know, these social media companies are hiring people to make social media outlets more addictive, and it's working, and it concerns me. So that's just an ongoing problem that's been plaguing the mental health community too. Like, what do we do about social media? Humbly, we are struggling with that.
Mm-hmm. And to your point about spring break, and, you know, I've seen some similar things where some of my clients or students have really thrived in their time away with their families because they're actually able to connect with their families. And I think it's really this longing to connect. And they're seeking that through social media, but it's actually really disconnecting them more deeply and making them feel more lonely.
Yeah, because it's like a watered down connection. It's and like even, not the real thing.
Exactly. And I mean, I even experienced that as an adult, you know, if I don't filter myself, but just like you said, you know, I'm in my mid-30s now, and so I can draw on the memory and the experience of not having social media as an outlet and having to call someone or spend time with my parents, you know, whereas students now, they don't even know what that's like. Like, all they know is internet. All they know is Instagram and TikTok and Snapchat. Mm. And so they're being trained to connect in that way. And yet it's not, it's kind of like an artificial, like you said, watered down connection. And so perhaps kind of going back to this idea of the church, you know, and you said, I remember you mentioned that they look forward to their Wednesday night gathering or whatever that is, because, and that's a role I think that the church does play is providing a space where they can connect with leaders and, with peers who are, you know, following God or at least seeking him, you know, at least seeking truth of some sort. And so that's a huge, huge role, I think, that, you know, we play as the church to come alongside teens, especially with this desire for connection.
And I really love what you said, Kate, about, you know, how you got to experience, like me, what life was like before social media just soared. And I think that's a reason why my office looks the way that it looks. It's got a pool table in there. It's got a ping pong table. Mm. It's got air hockey. It's got card games. It's got board games. And I feel on a subconscious level, because my heart hurts for kids that never really experienced that. Mm-hmm. Like, my brothers and I only played video games when it was raining outside. Or, check this out, we played video games when we were grounded.
Right.
Which is like the opposite now. Like, video games are taken away as a punishment.
Yeah.
Because we always had things to do. We were just boys being boys. So I noticed, even if with one of my teenage clients, if they'd had a rough day in school and they're like, look, Mr. Jordan, I'm not really trying to talk about anything deep with you today. It's just, I don't have it in me today. Mm-hmm. And we end up just, you know, playing some pool or some foosball. And we end up having a great conversation anyway, because that connection just gets people to open up and, you know, receive nourishment that social media doesn't provide consistently enough. Mm-hmm. And that other outlets that are watered down are just not helping our kids. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any ways that you counsel teens or advise parents, or maybe in your own life with your kids, what are some ways that you help your clients put up boundaries when it comes to social media?
So I encourage parents, and, you know, it's unfortunate because sometimes it leads to arguments near the end of the day, you know, time to put the phone away. And I get a lot of kids that get frustrated with me too, because they let me know that when the action starts getting really good on social media, it's usually around the time that they're supposed to be going to bed. And I think that's, you know, I think it speaks to, you don't want teenagers up that late without any kind of adult supervision, because adults have to go to sleep and get ready for work the next day, or get their kids ready the next day. And I know that when I was a kid, I was not allowed to be in the candy store by myself, because I would have ate so much candy that I would have gotten sick. I know that when I was a teenager and got keys, I couldn't be out all night because I would have done some things that I wouldn't be here today. We have to be strict and stern, but we can do it in a way that we can still have our kids feel empowered. So what I'm a big fan of and what I tell parents to do is to give your kids options. Say, hey, if you want to stay up and watch, let's just say, the Braves opening day just came about. It usually means it's going to start at 7:30, going to be and over at 10:30. You know, you got to put the phone away at 7:30. Then you can stay up instead of, you know, you having to go to bed, because elementary schoolers have to go to bed like 9, 10 o'clock. And a lot of these elementary schoolers are starting to get more into baseball because of how well the Braves did, which is cool.
Right.
Baseball is my favorite sport. And for so long, I've been told that it's boring. So it's one of those things where if you give your kid the option, like, hey, we're going to go out to eat. I'm going to let you choose where we go out to eat tonight. However, when we come back home, we're putting the phone away. So it's like, okay, I know that it's hard for you to, you know, put the phone down. And so I'm going to, you know, sit in that frustration with you, understand it, but also because I love you, I'm going to give you something else for you to get excited about that's better for your spirit, better for your soul, while still giving you something that you do want and will appreciate. Maybe not as much, because maybe it's not going to be on the scale from 1 to 10, that 9, 10, but it'll be that 6, 7. I think, unfortunately, parents too often will be so absolute in their approach and reaction. So it's like they just take everything away. And then what you have on your hands now is a child that's going just to rebel against the system and just learn to be sneakier, when you can meet with your child halfway by making them feel empowered, by giving them options, give them something else to fill that hole with. If you're going to take social media away, or you're not going to let them have it all the time, what are you going to fill that space with that can get that kid, again, not as excited about it, but still somewhat excited? And that's worked for families that have been consistent with that. Some families try and they're like, oh, it's not working. It's just leading to more conflict. Because, you know, a kid's going to check to see if you're really going to stick to it. And the kid thinks that he knows what's best, or she knows what's best for her, and he knows what's best for him. But if you start consistent and you do it for a good 2, 3 weeks, a month straight, the kid know that you mean business. And you know that it's okay, because at the end of the day, it's what's best for the child.
Right. Absolutely. And they need that, right? As much as we need to listen to teens and to really try to hear and understand them to the best of our ability, they also need structure and they need accountability in their lives in order to, there's safety in rules, right? And there's freedom in rules.
Yep.
Freedom to enjoy, freedom to be able to kind of live more fully and more healthily. So,
yeah, I've realized, so, you know, and about the whole options thing, when somebody comes back to my office for the first time, I want to play games with them to get to know them. So I have like a checkers game that's therapeutically rigged. I have a Jenga game that's therapeutically rigged. I have a Uno game that's therapeutically rigged to get you kind of talking, to get me talking too. And I give them the option, which one you want to play. And then, so you pick that. And for the second half, just by, you know, talking about stuff, because I know you're not used to talking about feelings and emotions, the second half of our time together, you get to do, you can pick anything that you want to do in my office. I'm very structured in my approach with kids in session, and I realize that it does make them feel more relaxed, like this is an adult that's got this under control, but he's also going to make sure I have a good time. He's not going to bore me to death. And I really do think it's easy for me to do that as a therapist for 45 minutes with a client. It's a little bit more challenging for a parent that has their child 24/7, 365. But I think there's ways that a parent can make it more fun and make their child feel more empowered by just giving them options, like you're talking about, because it helps them to feel more free in that structure, which, and on a subconscious level, they know it's what's best for them, because then they're allowed to just be a kid. If they're playing the adult game or try to play the adult game, that's just going to make them more anxious, because they're not built, they're not developed to the point where they can play the adult game.
what do you see like in the relationship between, so I'm the discipleship coordinator here at Perimeter for high school ministry. And what role do you see, you know, as you're wanting to support teens and equip parents and how to do that well? What relationship do you see between like mental health, anxiety, depression, and discipleship? And like, where does it become, I'm struggling with this sin habit and I want to disciple you to become more like Christ, and yet, but then what's that line between that and struggling with anxiety and depression?
Yeah, and I think they're very close to one another. And especially the way a child's going to feel that, it's going to feel that anxiety both ways, especially a teenager that wants to be closer to God and is, you know, experience that relationship with God as something that's very secure. And then the older they get, the more they realize that this is kind of a big bad world that they're going to be launched into, and that makes them anxious, and they want to be prepared for that while still maintaining that relationship with their maker. So it's one of those things, again, where as the adults, if we can make them the expert and we can kind of speak that, you know, you know, you're getting more ready for college or you're driving now. Has that been cool, but also kind of scary in a way?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you have more options to do things that maybe aren't true to your integrity. And that's not coming at them in a spirit of judgment or like, oh, if you say the wrong thing here, you're going to be punished. It's more like a curiosity, more like a joining them in the struggle.
Right.
And then even if they don't answer there and then, it leaves the door open for them to come to you later. And anybody can do that. I mean, friends can do that with friends.
Yeah.
A discipleship group leader can do that. A parent can do that. And the more people you have doing that for you, the better you'll be set up, because you have a better support system that, you know, you'll feel like really wants the best for you.
Yeah.
And even if you do fall, you'll be forgiven and you have the support system to help rebuild you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about social media playing an impact in this increase of anxiety and depression. What role, I mean, this is kind of a loaded question, but what role do you see that the pandemic and the impact of COVID has had on teens? How have you seen that in your practice? What are some ways, some things we might need to know as we move forward post, or hopefully almost post COVID, as we move forward after the pandemic?
Yeah, you know, it's been spoken to how much that negative impacted so many teenagers. And I could go in that direction, but I think, you know, so many people have already heard that narrative. What I was encouraged by with a lot of the parents that I see or that I saw during that time, I felt they stepped their game up with their social media. They shared with me that they started doing more group chats with parents of friends. So they would kind of stay in tune with one another and cover each other's blind spots. Like, I don't think there's enough credit to how parents navigated the pandemic because they loved their kids that much. And I think that's one way to combat that because social media is not going anywhere.
Right.
Now, I could be the old man in the room to point my finger and say, you know, this social media is ruining our kids, but that's not going to make a difference. It's just going to make me come across as more out of touch.
Yeah.
But if I can find a way to use that same tool so that I can still be that protector for, you know, my children, for my community, and partner with other parents, and we're communicating regularly and covering each other's blind spots, it made a huge difference. It got so many kids out of certain things that they could have very easily found themselves in, that the parents would come to me and say, hey, I discovered that this was going to happen, and we found a way to shut that down. So that kind of stuff, I think, doesn't get talked about enough.
Yeah, no, that's a great, excellent point that, you know, parents need each other just as much as teens need a support system. Parents need a support system.
Yeah, and it's the crazy thing about that is it worked. There are so many parents that were more connected when their children were younger, like elementary school.
Right.
And then things start changing in middle school. And then you're like, oh, you know, you used to know all your kids' friends and their friends' parents. And then when they get to middle school and high school, you're like, I don't know this kid. I don't know this kid's parents. Right. And that's, you know, my daughter's only 7, so I haven't experienced that yet. But that's scary because I know all my, you know, daughter's friends and their parents. So I think it's one of those things you just don't give up and just say, well, this is how it is. I think there's a way that you can get that back.
Yeah.
and get that, because it's still needed. They still are in need of those parameters the older they get, because, you know, they have more opportunities to do things that wouldn't be in their best interest as opposed to when they were much younger.
Absolutely. What are some practical resources that you would recommend to parents or leaders who are coming alongside to help teens?
I would say social media. Like, seriously, I would start some groups, some group chats as soon as possible, and stay connected with parents, stay connected with your child's discipleship group leader. Because what I teach so many parents that feel like they got to do more and become more of that helicopter parent the older their child gets, and unfortunately that just kind of drives their teenager even more away. I teach them to do more behind the scenes parenting. So, you know, I think I just want to piggyback off of, you know, staying in partnership with other parents, that resource of using social media and whatever. If we could start an app, I can't think of any apps off the top of my head other than doing group text with other parents, where you're kind of keeping your eyes on your children. More than just, was it 365, 360, what's that app called that so many kids have?
Life 360.
There you go. Because, you know, that helps too. But I think that's a resource in and of itself. Other than that, I can't think of any manuals or resources other than if your child is going to counseling, make it a point to, you know, check in with that therapist. Don't just drop your kid off. Or it's good to kind of say, hey, I know you can't share everything with me, but, you know, I noticed that my son was doing this or my daughter was doing that, and just figured you should know that. So I guess my examples of resources are more of the live and breathing resources as opposed to like a book. But that's how I've operated, and that's what I have more expertise in.
That's awesome. I mean, I think essentially what you're saying is, you know, engage with the people who are influencing your child.
Yes.
Yeah. And stay connected with them. It's a team effort.
That's right.
And, you know, we always talk to our leaders about partnering with the parents. But it's really a two-way street. The parents need to engage with the leaders just as much as the leaders need to engage with the parents.
That squeaky wheel, seriously, because you love your child that much.
Right.
Because if you come at them with that same energy, you're just going to push them more away the older they get. But the more behind the scenes involvement, and then you also feel like you're still being the best parent you can be. Because I think, you know, when we are parenting out of fear that we're not doing enough, then we're not playing to our strengths as parents or as youth group leaders or as discipleship group leaders.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you one final question as we wrap up. But looking at, you know, you've worked for many years with children and teenagers and adolescents. What is your hope? What are you excited about for this next generation?
Yeah, I've been doing this so many years. First time I started seeing clients was 2009 as an intern. Back when there was more of a stigma, if I was bringing somebody back and they were on the phone, of course it was a flip phone back then, they'd be like, and they're in the waiting area and they're talking to somebody, oh, I got to go. And they just kind of get off the phone without really saying what they're going to do. 2022, I have so many of my teenage clients that share with me that they've talked about me to their friends, and how talking about how you go see a counselor is not as nearly at all as stigma attached to it. When I was coming up, that was something you kept under wraps.
Right.
I never saw a counselor as a kid. I definitely could have benefited from it. So my hope is that this has become even more mainstream.
Yeah.
Just as much as going to the dentist, even if you don't necessarily have significant trauma or grief that you've dealt with, you still kind of go in to see your counselor that you've developed rapport with to get your quote unquote teeth cleaned once a year, because I think that would just benefit, you know, just be more proactive with your mental health as opposed to reactive. I feel like in my line of work, it's still way too reactive, way too responsive, and I'm looking forward to it being more preemptive and proactive, because I could do the world a whole bunch of good, starting with this community.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for just giving us your time, Jordan, and your wealth of information when it comes to counseling and coming alongside teens. So, and good luck with your new practice.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Kate.
The Perimeter Student Ministries Podcast with Kate Kim is an 8-week podcast released every Monday through the end of May. For more info, please visit our site at perimeter.org/students.